Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Inside F1 with Joe Saywood. I'm your host, Richard Reddy, but my friends call me Spanner, so let's be friends. The Joe Show is a few days earlier than advertised by Uncle Steve on Sunday's show, because this Sunday we're going to have a live mailbag show with me, Chris, and Matt, and Matthew Summerfield, Summer's F1. So get your questions and comments to us via feedback@missedapex.net. All F1 topics, not just tech. I want to find out what Summers thinks about things beyond aero and tyre squirt. But today, we have with us the most experienced motorsport journalist in the entire universe, who has attended every race since 1884. It is, of course, Joe Saywood. How's it going, Joe?
I'm feeling old after that introduction, yeah.
1988. You've been to every
Grand Prix. Yes, that's true.
And in that time, can you wander freely round a racetrack? Do you ever venture beyond the press office?
I can do, if I wish to. But most of the tracks I've been to, normally what happens with a new track is that I will go out on a Thursday and walk the track. And here's a little secret. I always walk the tracks in reverse.
Oh, why?
You know why?
No.
Because everybody else is walking it the other way, so you get to meet everybody.
That's a good trick. So you get to basically ambush the team.
Well, you don't need to ambush them. You just greet them in a friendly fashion and say, what do you think of it? And have a chat. And I meet all kinds of people that way. But if you go the same way as everybody else, you know, you just follow the same people all the way and you don't meet anybody. So I just started doing that years ago, and it's very clever.
I want to know about these track walks now, because you have like people, some people can't be bothered at all. So isn't it Ricardo says he doesn't like doing the track walks, and Verstappen doesn't like them either. Do you sort of see what the guys are up to while they're out there trying to suss things out? Do you see what they're looking for?
Not really. I mean, they know all these things from Sims and all the rest of it, but they're looking for, you know, things like the curbs. They spend a lot of time looking at curbs, actually, and lines of sight and this sort of stuff. And probably a few cambers as well, but you know, most of the Sims have got this stuff in it already. But you know, it's just a sense of also, you know, identifying breakpoints, because some of the Sims may not have them exactly up to date, this kind of stuff. So well, it's true. Yeah. I mean, Sims can only be up to date to a certain extent, and year by year these things change.
And things like was it in Australia where Ricardo ended up going off track a little bit and hitting a drain cover, you know, things like that. If he'd have gone on the track walk, he might have picked that up. Like, where can I do a cheeky overtake offline?
Well, I think the drain cover thing is, I mean, I don't suppose they're going inspecting the drain covers. That's the safety people who do that. But they do occasionally come up. It just gives you an idea of the power of the Formula One car when they bust the welds.
Hoover it up. Yeah.
And Hoover, yeah.
Oh, that's only going to get worse now. But I'm interesting. So someone in the live chat, Mark, has said, if you walk backwards round the track, how do you see where you're going? No, you've misunderstood, Mark. He simply goes in the opposite direction. Who do you look out for, though, in a team? Because maybe the drivers are busy. Do you have certain people on each team, like, you go, I'm going to speak to the strategist. I'm going to ambush the tech guy.
No, I have people I know well and people I've known for many years, and just depending on who's coming the other way. A lot of them are drivers, but not all of them. Some teams I have better sources than others, and it changes all the time. You know, people move around, people come, people go, you build new relationships, all this kind of stuff. It's just a sort of ongoing world of change thing. That's the thing about Formula One, is that it's a constantly changing world. And so you have to keep up with it. Otherwise, you fall away, and all the people you knew aren't there anymore.
Yeah, you can't tell us, can you? You're not going to say which teams you have better sources at than others. Which teams go running from Joe Saywood? That's what I'd want to know.
There are one or two of them. But of course, that'll change now too, of course. Because all the team principals have been shuffled around recently, as you may recall.
Force India then, still.
No? Force India, who's that?
Come on, in the before time.
Aston Martin.
Are they friends with you now? Now they're Aston Martin.
Well, it's okay. I don't have a huge amount of time for the boss because I'm allowed to say it. You know, he's just told me one or two porkies over time, and it's not a good plan to tell porkies, because after a while I don't trust you anymore, so I don't bother. Because I have a rule which is a very sound rule, which is you don't talk to people who lie to you, because if you do, they'll just mislead you. And if they come up and say, but you never talk to me, you just say, well, you've lied to me too many times, so your problem, not mine.
There certainly was some different PR out of there, because who was the team principal before? He's gone to Alpine now, Otmar Szafnauer,
yes.
Especially with the stuff around Perez being let go, they did seem to be just two camera saying thing. And when they were caught out, they just went, but technically I didn't exactly say this thing. And there was sort of an air of like, well, what's the point listening anymore?
Well, that was actually the reason I fell out. It was over Otmar, because I heard about Otmar a long time in advance that he was going there, and it just kept being denied. And in the end, I said, well, it's going to happen. And when it happened, I duly went, there you go. It's happening. So what's the point? And so, I mean, I talk to people in the team. I don't necessarily talk to the team owner. That's all. Yeah. And, you know, Mike Crack, I have vague memories of him in the old days. He was a fairly junior fellow, but I did know him briefly. He seems like a good fellow. There's plenty of people around. You don't have to always talk to the owner or the team principal, because there are plenty of other people you can trust. But that's enough about that.
Actually, it's really interesting, like, to see your sources, I'm sure, are pitched at a lot higher than ours. But like, the teams have got hundreds of people in it. Like, we'll often get like the guy who mops up when there's an oil spill, or, you know, a front left tire mechanic, you know, just, you know, the Derek's in the team, who will listen to the podcast and drop in and give us information. And most of them are pretty honest, because they go, you know, they say it's quite compartmentalized. You know, here's my viewpoint from where I am on the shop floor. But they don't get, you would think that everyone in the team, all the mechanics, know exactly what's going on. It's a big enough organization that actually not all the information filters down.
Oh, believe me, over time I've told people about things that are going to happen to them. and I mean, literally, I've told team principals they're going to be fired, and they've laughed at me. And a week later, they've rung up and said, "How did you know that?" And you know, there's things that all information does not circulate. A lot does, more than appears in the media, obviously. But there's a lot of stuff that's quite quiet too, and the drivers don't always know a lot either, which is quite funny. You know, they are in the middle of it all. But they're not necessarily being told everything that's happening, which is why you need to have your own networks of information, which is, of course, one of the skills of the job, is that when I go around talking to spies, they're all talking to me. And what the spies want is information from me. So we go around trading, and that really is how it works. And if you're not part of that trade network, you can't get anything like as much stuff, because when you sit down with the team principal who's sensible, they say, "What do you know about this?" And I go, "Well, I know this." And they go, "Okay, well, I've heard this." And, you know, that's how it works. Now, it's not always like that. And some of them are still, you know, I don't really waste a lot of time with the ones I don't trust. But there are some who are very useful.
So we've got a question actually from Mike
from Matt Woodford on Twitter about this specific topic. Now, we do have a lot of great questions here about the new F1 teams coming in and some specific driver and team news. It's a surprisingly busy news cycle for January. But since Matt's one is related to this, I'll go with it. Matt says, it's always a highlight for me to hear Uncle Joe's words of wisdom from many years in the paddock. Many, many, many years in the paddock. I just want to ask if there are more or fewer genuine motor racing journalists in the paddock these days, and which period you enjoyed most as a journalist? Because obviously, is there less journos? I mean, there's more of me. What did you call us, lot, Joe? Bottom feeders? Is that what you called us?
Possibly.
Us,
I don't
shed
know.
Dwellers.
yeah, there's a lot less. Yes, it's a dying breed. The on-site Formula One journalist, because it's just too expensive. And after the pandemic, a lot of magazines and newspapers realized that they didn't need to send their sort of people. You know, when you're churning out a few hundred words a weekend, you really don't want somebody who's on a big salary to be spending anything between 50 to 100 grand on travel costs in a year. So the newspapers have scaled back a lot. Magazines have scaled back a lot. You know, we've got some pretty famous magazines who don't have people at races. And, you know, I don't necessarily want to name them, but there's an awful lot of journalists who pretend they're there and aren't.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, we'll publish a full list of names in the show notes of those journalists. And actually, this is what sets apart your blog. And I'm not just, you know, blowing smoke up your crack, but the fact that you are going to every race, your green notebook really does sit like a travelogue of your experience and brings people into the paddock. So I'll go and recommend your green notebook. We'll also put a link to that in those show notes as well. But I guess you being part of that dying breed does put your PDF publication in a unique position now, as a kind of, it's almost from another time. And I don't mean that in an insulting way, Joe.
No, I think that's absolutely right. But, you know, I work on the principle that things go in cycles and some things go out of fashion. Right now, everyone in the world is podcasting, and we've been doing it for quite a long time, but everyone in the world is now podcasting away like crazy, aren't they?
It definitely wasn't cool when I started doing it, or when you started joining us as well.
But it is, you know, in a while people may get bored of the spoken word and want to have old style magazines again. Probably not, admittedly. But then you look at all the rubbish that appears on Twitter or whatever social media, let's say. There's so much rubbish, and on all the websites that are extrapolating what limited information they have. So, you know, you can get burned out trying to follow it all, because how do you know what's true and what's not? And the bottom line is the only way you can do that is to have people you trust and people you know might have it right. And, you know, there aren't many of them. So, people use Google Translate a lot too, which is another thing. But, you know, because Google Translate, while being a genius invention, doesn't always get it 100% right. And sometimes that leads to all kinds of chaos.
Before we get to everybody's questions, and they've been flowing in not only in our live Patreon chat, but also on Twitter and Slack all day as well. A very popular guy, Joe. And if people want an opportunity to hang out for 2 hours with you on a Zoom call, we have on sale some a limited amount, 50 tickets on sale to the virtual live audiences. All the previous ones have been very well received, were very well enjoyed, and we've had lots of returning people. So if you go to missedapexpodcast.com/Joe, you can buy your ticket. It's on the 13th, Joe. The 13th of, it's Friday the 13th. So, you know, he'll get unlucky and he'll finally reveal secrets that will get him cancelled properly this time, not fake Twitter cancelled like you try and do every 5 minutes.
Well, I try to avoid it being cancelled by people, but, you know, sometimes you've just got to say what you think, don't you?
But those live audiences are great. They are driven by the attendees' questions. It's very intimate. You have to bring your own drinks, because it's over Zoom, but go and check that out now. And
you can go to one in Australia. That's the next live one. There's a proper live one, which where you don't have to. Well, you do have to buy your own drinks, but you don't have to bring them with you. You know. So.
And whilst I'm emceeing for Joe and coordinating the virtual one, I haven't been invited to the Melbourne one. But enough about that.
Well, you're invited to the Melbourne one. You just have to pay the ticket.
You know, I don't have money. MissedApexPodcast.com facebook.com/Joe. Let's go to Christopher Fonseca for the first question, who says, Joe, how quickly will Aston Martin implode under the weight of Fernando and Lawrence's egos? And whilst that is Chris's words, not mine, I certainly am very sceptical about how Fernando Alonso fits in to that dynamic.
Well, I wouldn't use the word ego as being the problem. I would use the word character. Because they are both difficult characters. You know, they're not, they don't get on naturally with everybody. They are abrasive, both of them. They can be very charming, both of them can. But I have a vague suspicion that it will not be awfully good relationship.
Okay.
If only because the team exists for one reason, which isn't because Stroll wants to sell Aston Martin road cars. That wasn't the original purpose of it. The original purpose is so that Lance Stroll can drive Formula One cars.
Yeah.
And if Lance Stroll can't beat Fernando Alonso,
which is a safe bet, I would think.
Which may be a safe bet. Lance can have his moments. He's quick sometimes, but he's not the full package. But more importantly, if he does, it's how Alonso reacts that is the problem, because Alonso will not believe that Lance Stroll is better than him, I'm sure, because Alonso believes he's the greatest driver in the world and always has done. And, you know, when somebody else beats him, there's always some reason for it in his mind, which is normal among racing drivers. Yeah. Quite often they need to find some reason as to why they're not the best, or they sort of give up because they realize, ah, okay, I found somebody who can beat me. And it happens to everybody, every single career. In Formula One, apart from the ones who went out early, if you like, is one day you meet somebody who's quicker than you, maybe because you're getting old, maybe because you weren't good enough in the first place. But everybody has to face that conundrum at some point in their careers and say, well, what do I do about it? I found somebody I can't beat.
Yeah, I mean, there's some famous examples of people being sort of honest with that. I think you had Mark Webber, didn't you, saying, well, you know, I'm not going to get any quicker from this point going forward in my career. And probably Vettel's probably had to accept that along the way at Ferrari also. But it's the nature of the teammate battles, isn't it? There's almost like a heavyweight boxing mentality. Once a driver's beaten by their teammate, you know, substantially, their reputation just seems to just go into the dirt. And it's like prize fighters.
But that's exactly what it is. It's a knockout competition. It's a knockout competition. It's like the World Cup, if you like. You know, you can have glitches in that where somebody will win in a year by accident, group, yeah. Like Nico Rosberg won the World Championship. But nobody in the world would ever consider him to be an equal of Lewis Hamilton, would they, ultimately?
You've not read the internet, Joe, but yes, I agree with you.
I may not. I have read the internet a lot, and there's a lot of rubbish out there. But, you know, the fact is that Nico Rosberg is not Lewis Hamilton. The reason he quit was because he knew that.
Yeah.
And he knew he could only do it once. So, and that was because Lewis had an engine failure, ultimately. Yeah. So, you know, these guys, they come and they go. And there are some who are delusional. There are some who are dishonest with themselves. But most of them are fairly sensible people and realize that I can't beat this guy. And therefore, you know, what am I doing with the rest of my life after I've made a pile of money, by the way? That's the other thing.
But Lance Stroll is kind of an exception to that. As our chat room is pointing out, Lance Stroll has only ever beaten Sorokin in F1. He doesn't seem to be discouraged. If anything, he came into his partnership with Vettel with a renewed confidence and seemed to be fighting Vettel very hard. Whereas when he was against Perez, his head seemed a little bit more kind of hanging down from his shoulders. So how much of it is Lance himself pushing to keep going?
Well, that's a very good question.
Thank you. I've been doing this a while.
There's a lot of people in Formula One, rightly or wrongly, who think that Lance Stroll actually isn't that particularly bothered about being a Grand Prix driver because he's a multi-billionaire or will inherit multi-billions from his father at some point, and that ultimately there's a kind of he's doing it to please his dad, which I don't know, maybe not. I kind of think not. Because, yeah, he's too good to be doing that, and not quite good enough to be a top guy. So I mean, you can't knock him. He's got some podiums. He was on pole. He led a race, but he's not the full package. And that is the truth of it. Now they think, or some people think, that you can learn how to be the full package. Well, they can't. That's just something that you have to learn over time. But It's odd because Lawrence Stroll's been around Formula One for 30 years. He should know that. I remember him arriving in 1992. And, you know, he was even more brash in those days and loud and a sponsor with the original Team Lotus. When it turned, if you look back at the pictures, you'll see Tommy Hilfiger on the last couple of years of Lotus, and that was him.
Ah, that's interesting. I'll tell you what, though, in Lance Stroll's defence, if you think of a driver, like an out-and-out pay driver who literally hands over cash, or someone does, for their seat, he's probably the best, like, out-and-out pay driver that I can think of in the time that I've been watching Formula One, because he's had unprecedented opportunity. We can't say that he hasn't improved. I would say that there would be an argument if you needed a current F1 driver now in a number two seat, you might hire Lance Stroll if you were.
I can upset lots of people by naming names, and people would say, well, he's not a paid driver, but, you know, he's only there for a reason other than
Schumacher.
Mick Schumacher is a good example of that. Latifi's a pretty good driver too, I have to say. You know, Nicholas was no fool, but again, not the full package. And there's a number of people like that. You have to be rich nowadays, or you have to be supported by a Formula One team. You can't just wander in and be able to sort of find sponsorship outside. It just doesn't happen like that. You've got to basically be picked up by a Formula One young driver program, or be a son of a rich daddy. So, okay. And generally speaking, the sons of the rich daddies don't get picked up by the young driver programs unless they're young driver programs that take people on because they get paid to do it. And that's enough about the Ferrari program. Well, it's true. Half of them, half of them paid for the other lot.
Because Gutierrez, you know, was on the Ferrari program, wasn't he, as well?
No, I don't think so.
I thought he was at some point.
I mean, Lance Stroll was on the Ferrari program at one point.
Ah, I see.
But what happened in those days, and I don't know if it's still happening today, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but you used to pay to be on it if you weren't one of their golden children. And therefore, they basically funded the others. So, or funded towards the others, probably, is more to the point.
Our resident driver pro, Brad Philpott, describes a lot of this as pro-am. So you've got the drivers like Lance Stroll coming through that actually make the business viable for people to go out and find the talented drivers.
Yes, I think that's a fairly fair assessment, although some of the teams don't do that. So from the Mercedes young driver program is based just on pure talent, as far as I can tell anyway. Mm. Alpine is the same. I haven't seen any evidence to suggest that there's any money coming in there from the drivers themselves. They literally go out and choose the people they think are good. And of course, Red Bull has always been all about brutal performance in a brutal way. I mean, you know, they are cruel.
Yeah. But they come under lots of flack for that. But it's the pinnacle of motorsport. Surely it should be like that. You get your shot, and if the stars don't align and you don't take it, that's you. That's done.
But you wouldn't be there without them. Exactly, so, you know, it's brutal, and it's, you know, they drop you from a very big height. But, you know, if you can't swim, don't jump in at the start.
Hang on. I was going to divulge a private conversation there, but I shan't. But I do have first-hand conversation with somebody who actively said, there is no way I would take a Red Bull driver program. And this was from someone going up the junior series. No way I would take that Red Bull seat because it is so brutal, and they actively shied away from it. So that is a factor for drivers when they get these offers.
That's very much a factor. And it's also another thing that is a factor is that some of them think that the brutality of it, while being honest, if you like, is such a damaging thing for a driver's mental state. And some of them never get over it. You know, when they get kicked out, because they all think, as previously discussed, they all think they're the greatest person in the world. And when somebody says, actually, you're not. And you get fired off into Formula E or some other disastrous future. Well, it's true. That just goes through the Red Bull drivers who are in Formula E. I mean, you know.
No, calling Formula E a disastrous series.
No, I didn't call it a disastrous series. It's a disastrous outcome for a career. Okay. That's different. But it's not. Well, It's an interesting argument, isn't it, I suppose?
Yes, we could have that
How's the TV viewing figures doing? Are they any good?
Oh, people tuning into the live stream, Joe. I try not to focus on it
I'm
too much.
I'm talking about Formula E.
Oh, I see. Sorry, I thought you meant our little live stream. Sorry, I was watching the live stream figures. No, I think it has been going down. And I do feel bad for Formula E because it's got so much potential. But people need to kind of forgive the lack of outright speed and understand what it is they're doing. And then in order for them to make up for it, I feel like they have to kind of go to these street tracks because they couldn't put those cars in Silverstone or Brands Hatch or Donington because it would show how slow they were.
They were told this at the beginning.
Yeah.
This was not going, you know, Formula 4 speed is not going to be impressive.
Yeah.
Now they've got faster cars and it'll be interesting to see what they do. But you know, even so, they don't want to put their cars on a track that they can be compared with anything else. So it's a bit like, you know, you read the rumours about, what was one I read the other day, which was marvellously silly? Oh, yes, having IndyCar and Formula One on the same circuits. Well, that would be a disaster for IndyCar.
Yeah.
Because while they are very fast cars on an oval, and, you know, you can always go to the top speed and say, look, that's far faster than Formula One. And people do that all the time. But when you watch them wallowing around the corners on a street track, and believe me, well, we'll see some of that with NASCAR this next summer when they go to Chicago on a street track. You are talking about wallowing around the corners. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. These things are going to look like complete pigs. Not to mention pushing back the concrete barriers considerably if they actually go off, because these things weigh twice as much as the concrete barriers. So there's all kinds of silly things that people, you read. But Formula One overall, you know, just whizzing around these tracks, they're jolly fast cars. What? And, you know, while the people in Formula E are most of them are very talented drivers, I'm not knocking that. I just think the concept of what it's been for the last few years and where it's going in the future, I'm still not sure.
I hope it goes somewhere, because you say the drivers, it's probably one of the most talented grids in motorsport, isn't it?
Yes, it probably is. But the point is not that. The point is that when it gets to the time in which everything switches to electric, gee whiz, guess what's going to happen? Formula One switches to electric, electric cars. What's going to happen to Formula E? lots of blum, 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 rum, rum, rum noises, and that will be the end of that.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to adopt a championship that nobody ever watches.
Yep. To get back to the question, though, you have taken us on a lovely meandering journey through motorsport, though. I just want to go back to Alpine for a second and go, I think Fernando Alonso is still like one of the genuine talents in Formula One. And it's been sort of weird to see him floundering around in the Honda McLaren era and look at his performance still against, you know, a much fancied Esteban Ocon, not by you. Necessarily, but you know, he's considered a talent, and points aside and the way things went out aside, you'd be hard pressed to look at the lap times, look at how that season went across, watch the races on the live timings and say that Fernando Alonso was not the better driver at 55 years old or whatever he is now. So like, he's gonna go there and be better than Lance Stroll. If he doesn't, the universe is flipped upside down.
Of course. But you know, Fernando Alonso has enormous natural talent. And many people in Formula One would say that Fernando Alonso should have won 5 world championships. He didn't. He won 2. Why? Because he made a bunch of lousy decisions as to where to go. And there's some people who might argue that this is a new lousy decision on his part.
He's not a people pleaser, is he? That's the impression I get.
He wants to please people, but he just sometimes doesn't know how to, because he's so aggressively competitive that it tends to trip him up. And, you know, why would you leave Alpine and go to Aston Martin? It's not about money. It's about basically being, I would think he would feel disrespected by Alpine because they were considering hiring a Piastri rather than him. It was a difficult, they got themselves into a difficult situation of having to choose between the two. And in the end, they lost both as a result of that difficult situation. But the reason they lost Alonso was because he was offered something else, and it was like, wait, I can screw them on this one. Good, I'll do that.
So you think he cut his nose off a bit? Because where did Aston Martin finish?
Yes, but he's always done that.
Where did Aston Martin finish this season? Seventh?
Fifth, I think.
Fifth, is it? Oh, okay.
Was it fifth? I can't remember. McLaren was fourth. No, Alpine was fourth, McLaren fifth, Aston, yeah, I guess, was sixth, but only by the skin of their teeth, because they had equal points with whoever the other one was. And they had equal points, and it was all a bit of a counting back kind of thing. In fact, to be fair, I think, you know, they kept on going, developing, and the others backed off. Mm. So they came rushing in at the end, and they were quite lucky to get up as high as they did, in a way. They may suffer for that next year in putting in too much in at the end of last year. We'll have to see how the money goes, I suppose.
Well, enough of these old, boring, existing teams, Joe. Should we talk about some new teams?
Well, you can do it. It might be a very boring conversation.
Hang on, I have to press a button and there's music and flashing lights and all sorts. Let's put it in the form of an interesting question, Joe, from Jack and Simon. Jack Reeves says, what does Joe make of the FIA president talking about adding new teams? And then Simon wants to follow that up by saying, what does Joe think would be the best way to add new teams, assuming that you would want to add new teams at all? So starting with Jack, Mohammed Ben Suleiman comes out and says, we are exploring ways for new applications to come into F1. So that means my dream will finally be realised of a 30-car grid.
Okay, well, what Mohammed bin Sulayem has said is that they are looking at a way to ask for expressions of interest. That doesn't mean they're accepting entries. That means they want people to put forward a dossier to see if there's enough interest to have a competition to then win. There are two available, in theory, entries. Having said that, the expression of interest to get to the next level of the competition is just one step. Then you've got to go beyond that and prove that you are worth having. Formula One doesn't want to have dead ducks. And if you look back, the history of new teams in Formula One has been one of teams that die. Yeah. Now, it's a bit different now because you have a situation where they will get a share of the prize money immediately if they pay $200 million up front. Which is, people say you can't do that, but actually you can, because your new teams are taking money away from the existing teams who've all invested a lot in the sport, and there's no reason that a new team should be given the advantages that old teams have earned. So if there is anybody who's got the money, the people, the factory, the package, the engine deal, the sponsorship, to convince the FIA, and FOM, by the way, because they need to have commercial agreements, that they will add value to the sport, then there may be some new entries. But I'm not entirely sure, unless there's a manufacturer out there planning his own team, or their own team, or its own team, or whatever, him, it, whatever
Well done, Joe. Good effort. Good try.
We'll have to see. Maybe I tend to think there's two feelings I have. One is that Bin Sulayem is playing to the crowd and he's sort of saying, you know, we don't want this image of us rejecting new people, but we will anyway in time. Or there is a manufacturer out there who's decided that they can't do it their own way and wants to have an entry. I'm not sure that the Andretti package that I know of thus far is necessarily sensible, because, you know, to set up a team that is building cars in America just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Look how much they struggle in Switzerland and Italy with staff.
Yeah,
and
exactly. I think the thing is that the level of what is needed is something that not all the people outside Formula One understand just how, you know, Andretti has not won a championship in IndyCar for 10 years. They've won the Indy 500 occasionally. I think the last time they won was 13 or something. It's been Penske and Ganassi. So they are the third best IndyCar team, although, to be quite honest, nowadays with the oncoming McLaren, they might be the fourth best team this year. So we shall see. I mean, does that mean, yes, Andretti's a famous racing name to people who of a certain age remember Mario Andretti, or Michael Andretti to some extent, but it's not a global brand in the way that perhaps they think it is. I don't know. We'll have to see how it all develops, but it wouldn't surprise me if the expressions of interest don't result in anything. Okay. Unless there's a manufacturer out there, like if Honda has decided that they don't want to go have a relationship, they want to do it themselves, and they're the most likely ones because you know they're not the kind of people. Weirdly, they're not the kind of people who brand their engines or brand someone else's engines. Mm. Whereas a lot of the others would do that. And Porsche is the same thing, actually. Porsche, the idea of Porsche going into bed with Red Bull never really made much sense because Porsche always does its own thing. And there's reasons for that. One is that they want the technology. Mm. Secondly, they want the engineers to be trained up in the thinking of Formula One so that they can take that back into the main company and, you know, wake people up because, you know, that's what always been Honda's thing. Get the engineers to work at Formula One speed. And when they go back into the industry, they are much more useful than they were previously.
See, there's a lot of names there floating about. I want to get to the heart of maybe some of the motivation. And I butchered the pronunciation of the FIA president there. So help me. It's Mohammed Ben Sulayem. Ben Sulayem.
It can be Bin or Ben.
Ben Sulayem. What's his motivation for making that statement? You know, out loud.
I think it just shows that he's showing that, look, the FIA, i.e. me, is open to looking at new people, whereas most people have already sort of said, well, not really, because there's all kinds of elements that you need to think about. For example, the racing circuits do not have the space for more teams. It's true, but who's going to pay for them to build bigger pit lanes?
Isn't there more money in F1? The American dream.
The promoters don't get it.
One Las Vegas general entry admission to pay for all those pits.
Who gets all the money?
I don't know, Joe. That's why you're here to tell me.
The
Formula
One group is the one that makes the money.
So Liberty.
Liberty, they might be happy to, because they've bought some land and they've probably got some space. But, you know, if you're Zandvoort, there's nowhere you can put any more. You haven't got any money anyway. You're giving all your money to the Formula One group. There's nowhere else to put any new garages. So where are these new teams going to go? You know, and look at the freight. We're in an environmental situation already, trying to transfer all this stuff around the world without making a horrible mess of everything. If you have another 40 or 50 containers or whatever it takes to have all these extra teams, is that really helpful? And are they really going to be a benefit for Formula One? If they're not a benefit, okay, if it's an American team and it wins in this century, then it would have a value. Just having an American team in the midfield, nobody cares about who's in the midfield. Nobody cares.
Well, not at the moment, because the gap
is so big.
It's
only about winners. It's only about winners.
Surely when this regulation set has time to settle in, This is the regulation set.
But the regulation set is already set.
Yeah, but with the cost cap, surely this has got the most potential for teams to catch up over the course of the regulation set.
Well, you've also got these aerodynamic rules that are self-defeating. In other words, the more successful you are, the less wind tunnel time you get. It's basically designed to balance things up so it all gets closer racing without being too silly.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've only got until the end of 25, at which point after 25, there'll be a revamp of everything. And then you'll probably find one lot is ahead again by a long way. You need to have, in order to have really close racing, you need to have long established formulae that have rules where the information and the knowledge has spread between the teams by people moving around, by whatever means it is taken. If in the case of Aston Martin, you copy other people's cars, not in any illegal way, because you're allowed to copy the design of it. You just can't take their CAD cam, and you can't take photographs of it and reconstitute them as cam.
I can hear the lawyer's pens.
No, you
dropping.
Can't, because that's actually everything I've said there is perfectly reasonable. Right. Well, did last year's car look like a Mercedes or not? That was a Red Bull, wasn't it, last year?
You're thinking of the 2020, was it, Aston Martin?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that's the fastest way. The fastest way to get up to speed is to copy somebody who's quick. But, there's subtlety involved here somewhere, and there wasn't much subtlety involved in either of them. And it hasn't really been that successful because, you know, where were they in the championship last year? So they spent an awful lot of money. But would they have got to that level if they'd just gone on their own path, developing their own things? Probably not. Who knows? That's an in, you know, we can't answer that question.
Okay, well, maybe we can answer Brad's question. Good segue, me. Okay, so on Twitter, our own Brad Philpott has asked a question, as has Immy, about the cost cap. So I think that's a good place to go next. Mm-hmm. Brad mm-hmm. says, question for J-Dog. I think that's going to stick. Will the cost cap survive 2023? And Immy asks, will Red Bull stay within the budget? And if hypothetically they have another minor breach in for 2022, I think is the implication, what would the consequences be? Has the FIA invested more personnel into this side or any independent firms to help them police it? So I think these two questioners really putting the cost cap on trial. How's it gone? Will it stay?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
The cross cap is fine. The transgressions that came out at the end of this last year were minor in the extreme. And whether they had any impact on performance is highly arguable. Where there was a massive failure by the FIA was in countering the stories that were being put out by rival teams saying this is going to happen, that's going to happen. You know, this will change the rules for last year, this year, next year, whatever. There was a lot of tosh being talked. And it built this thing up into a situation whereby in the end they had to punish Red Bull in a way. In a severe way, even if, I mean, Red Bull screwed up a few bits and bobs, least of all forgetting to have a tax. You know, they had the ability to have a tax rebate.
Yeah, wasn't it 13 areas though, Joe? Wasn't it 13 separate areas?
Yes, but they were 13 minor areas and they were not a lot of money in when all you consider things. And the fact is that everybody now realizes, because the FIA punished them to such a level, is you're not going to do it again. They weren't doing it this year. They weren't. The FIA said they're not trying. You know, they weren't doing anything bad. They just got it wrong. So the other thing was that the regulation was very, very flabby last year, and it needed to be shrunk down so people understood what it actually meant. And there weren't areas, the grey areas, like is catering included? This kind, all this stuff that people made into stuff that wasn't there. At the end of the day, I think it worked pretty well, and I think it'll go on working pretty well. And anybody who, you know, if anyone who thinks that getting rid of the cost cap is a good idea is mad, because that's destroying the value of the teams.
Can I challenge?
You can challenge away as much as you like. Okay. I probably won't change my view, but there you are.
So you say, like, Red Bull, they weren't trying to. It was all just an unfortunate 13 misunderstandings, right?
But these are minor, tiny little things.
But are Red Bull, by their nature, a team that basically challenges the authorities to discipline them? Like, they push every area.
No. What they do is they push in every area.
That's what I just said.
But it's not the same thing. What you just said is, are they a team that pushes for the challenge? No, they're not pushing for a challenge. They're pushing to win. They push to win, and they have a different, just as a grey area is a grey area in the technical regulations, there were grey areas in the financial regulations that they wanted to sound out and see if they could get away with.
Right. And they haven't they?
And they didn't get away with it, but they weren't major things. They weren't things that made a huge difference. And then they gave away with that, with the nebulous tax, whatever it was, you know, that they had the chance to actually add something they didn't add. So, you know, they need to brighten up their act a bit.
Okay.
No question. But teams make mistakes. Ask Alpine about making mistakes, you know.
If you could go back in time to 2021 and you were Red Bull or Mercedes, would you push those limits knowing exactly what punishment you would get?
Well, you don't know what punishment you... First of all, you didn't know what punishment you're going to get. Secondly, you didn't know what the rules were ultimately, because they kind of changed things along the way as to what was and was not included. So, you know, that's a discussion. And we've had the discussion. We've had the result of the discussion. Red Bull have taken the pain resulting from that discussion. And they won't do it again, because they now know exactly that they will come in. The numbers they filed were under the rules anyway, under the limit this last year. They are not going to make the same mistake again. They want their wind tunnel time back.
I think you do it again. I think if you could give them the chance to go back and undo it, they do it again.
You reckon?
To get the advantage, to keep their 2021 title, and
You think they need the catering bill to improve that? Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Someone has asked Stuart in the chat room, just says, how good is the Red Bull catering, Joe?
To be honest, I never go there, so I don't know. In the old days, it used to be quite good, but the thing was that Red Bull were far too generous to everybody. So everybody was allowed to go and eat there. And then when the pandemic came along, they realized that this was a good opportunity to stop that happening. And so they stopped all the paddock hangers on going there. And consequently, they went a bit the other way, which means even getting in there now is a little bit tough. So that's fine. I meet the people I want outside and whatever. But, you know, it does. A lot of these teams did the same thing, which is they sort of just push everybody away a bit because they realize it's quite nice to have areas where there aren't hangers on. And one of the problems we also have at the moment is there's many, many more hangers on because Liberty Media is selling tickets to get into the paddock now with the paddock club.
Yeah.
And so the paddocks are full of people, which means that getting your job done is quite hard because people don't hang out anymore. You don't see drivers anymore.
They're trying to avoid that area.
Well, they can't, because if you're, you know, it's like Günther Steiner. If you're Günther Steiner and you try to walk down the paddock,
you're going to get
mugged. You get mugged by 1,000 people wanting your selfie and, you know, your babies or whatever they want. You know, it's just impossible to actually operate. So everybody hides now. So it makes it even harder for everybody else, the working people. And there's always the engineering meetings and the marketing meetings and the sponsor meetings and the meetings and the meetings to discuss when to have a meeting. All this kind of stuff going on. So it's difficult. But obviously, if the bottom line goes up, the value goes up, everyone gets more money apart from people who don't. There you are. Everyone's happy. And I'll tell you what, when the financial numbers come out in about a month from now, the last year, everyone's going to go, wow, haven't they done well? Because it will be 20% up.
Okay. Well, that's good.
The revenues will be 20% up.
That means that
everybody, teams, team-wise, FIA-wise, FOM-wise, everybody, 20% up is great. Media-wise, it's not. It's like 20% down because the travel expenses are even more.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
We don't get extra money by the number of races. So, you know, it's just a difficult thing.
You're going to have to start outsourcing, Joe. You can't go to 28 races or what it is, whatever it's going to be in a few years' time. You need to outsource it to a talented...
No, but by then I shall have happily retired.
Oh, really? Oh,
okay. So, well, you know, there's a limit to how much you can do this thing. And nowadays, traveling is not as much fun as it used to be. If any of you have been traveling recently, you'll know that the airports don't have the right number of staff to do the job properly. Airlines are skimping and everything is costing huge amounts of money more because they're all trying to make back the money they lost. And it's not fun.
Yeah.
And it's not like it used to be anyway.
No. And my weird little black passport doesn't seem to work quite as well as it did several years ago. That's for another day, Joe. A whinge for another time.
Oh, well, I have a purple passport, so that's fine.
Rub it in, Joe. Let's move on to some of the drivers. We've got about another 10 minutes with you, Joe. So I'll chunk through some of these questions, if that's okay. And don't forget, if you want to be in an intimate Zoom space with Joe, come and join us for the live audience, which is on Friday the 13th, MrApexPodcast.com/Joe. Check that out. See if a ticket for that event is right for you. 2 hours starting from 8 p.m. UK time. And let's see. Tom Power says, Happy New Year, guys. Happy New Year to you, Tom.
Happy New Year.
How long will Lando Norris stay at McLaren before jumping to Sauber or Audi?
Why would you jump to Sauber or Audi?
I don't think Lando Norris seems like a very happy chap. Whenever you talk to him about his clan, if you like, the class of, you know, 19 or whatever, you know, he always seems quite bitter. Everybody else who came through with him seems to have had their shot at a top team, Russell, Albon, Verstappen, etc. He always seems quite grumpy about his position on the grid at the moment.
Well, that's because McLaren aren't doing a good enough job. But they did a good job when he arrived, and they've created this image of him being fantastic. But they also have him under contract for a number of years to come. So, you know, quite rightly so. And he's, you know, he's the team number one there for a while. See what Oscar does. But, you know, he's going to be hard-pressed to find a similar situation in another team, even take into account the contractual situation. So he's still only 12 years old, remember?
Yeah.
And, you know, he's got years to come. So just like a lot of these guys are very, very young still, we forget how young they are. And so we're in a phase at the moment where everyone's in a sort of holding pattern. And some of them will get, some of their careers will get wiped out in the years ahead just by coming up against other people who are better than they are. And we have to see, you know, we have to see how Piastri does against Lando, for example. That's an interesting one. Gasly, Ocon, obviously, that's a very good one.
Oh, yeah, geez. That's got to be Gasly. Gasly, 100%.
You reckon?
Yeah, come in by Barcelona. He's on top of Ocon. He's got it.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll see about that. we've got to look at Mercedes as well.
Oh, you know, yeah.
We've got... Lewis can't go on forever. I mean, he will go on for a long time yet, I think, but he can't go on forever. And, you know, it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard for youngsters to come in and break through. But, you know, things change. Things move on. You've got to be beating your teammate. Look at Daniel Ricciardo. 3 years ago, Daniel Ricciardo, you know, couldn't do any wrong.
Mm.
And where is he now?
Cashing in at Red Bull.
Well, I think he's doing the right thing, to be honest, but that's another story.
He's not leaving F1 poor, is he? He's old Ricardo.
No, of course not. None of them are leaving F1 poor, but apart from the Stroll family, maybe. But they keep on going, spending at this rate, they might be. I think if you look at the way in which his confidence has been destroyed in the last couple of years, being a test driver, a reserve driver, is a very good way of learning that you're just as good as the good guys. Again,
mm-hmm.
Nobody knows. He doesn't know. McLaren don't know. Nobody understands what happened at McLaren. Why wasn't he any good? But he wasn't any good. There's no question about it. He didn't deliver. And he was lucky. You know, he won a race. He wasn't lucky, but he won a race that first year, which was kept the contract going. But the second year, there wasn't even a glimmer of that ever happening.
Yeah.
So
what did the Mighty Ducks do when they were struggling? They went to the streets and played street hockey to get their form back. That's what
exactly.
Daniel Ricciardo's doing. He's being Mighty Duck.
I think it's to do with confidence. And I can't remember if I mentioned it before, but Olivier Panis did this way, way back in the Prost era. And he'd been completely destroyed by his confidence was gone. And it was 1989, 1990, actually, because it was the drive. He turned down a Williams drive that Jenson Button took. He turned that drive down and went to be the reserve driver at McLaren, which at that time was quite successful. And he learned that he was as quick as Hakkinen and Coulthard. And then he had a much longer career after that, coming back. And I think he had another 6 or 7 seasons. Having, you know, realized and revived his belief in his own ability, if you like. So I think that, you know, Daniel's older than a lot of them, but he's still not old in modern terms compared to the Alonzos and Hamiltons of the world, you know. But they, again, they can't go on forever.
No, and like Lewis Hamilton, I'm sorry I can't credit the publication, but there was a quote that he was talking about how, oh, the end isn't that far away. And sometimes I get up and I think, do I want to do this anymore? And that's perfectly normal for a 30, 5-year-old. How old is he? 34, 35? But, you know, those thoughts to hear.
I think you need to add something there. A 35-year-old multi-squillionaire who's achieved an awful lot. You know, a lot of them are hungry because they haven't achieved a lot.
Oh, 37.
Not many of them lose their appetite because they haven't got enough money. they tend to have plenty of money.
Yeah.
And some of them have some funny ideas. I won't name any specific names, but some of them think that when they leave Formula One, they're going to build careers changing the world and, you know, turning forests into even greener things.
Well, you've been very specific there, so you didn't...
No, I haven't. I could be talking about Nico Rosberg as well. What people don't realise is that their platform is Formula One. And once they walk off that platform, honestly, nobody gives a monkey's. And this is what they all have to learn. There is a reset that they need to understand. That is, that they're not going to be famous after they leave Formula One just because they are campaigners at this and whatever. You have to have properly structured things that have been built up over time, which is what Lewis is doing, actually. Lewis is very cleverly building up businesses that he can move on to, be that film, fashion, whatever he wants, you know, whatever his thing is. He's or his people around him are building up a future for him that gives him a sense of purpose afterwards without having to rely on his fame.
Hmm. Yeah, the question was about Lando Norris, though, so 0 points.
Yeah, but the Lando Norris thing, I mean, Lando Norris, who knows? You know, we'll have to wait and see. He's quick.
Do I get...
The boy's quick.
He's quick, but you don't seem, like, overwhelmed. You seem exactly whelmed by Lando Norris.
To be honest, with Lando, I think he's really quick. But I don't know how quick, because he's never been up against somebody who's really been able to. I mean, we've always known that Daniel wasn't as quick as some of the others in qualifying. Always known that. Great racer, but never a great qualifier. But we've never had a proper sort of yardstick in Formula One for Lando. So I'm waiting to see how he does with Oscar. I've been really impressed by Lando in the last couple of years. But he's still quite young, but I think also he plays the young card quite well because he's a fairly tough cookie. He knows what he's up to. You know, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, you've got to be able to dominate a team and be embedded there. And McLaren does seem to revolve around Lando Norris right now. And that's smart. And that's why you wouldn't want to leave.
Well, it's smart if the team's going in the right direction, unfortunately.
Well, that's the gamble.
The gamble is that. Yes, the car company is not in great shape. And the Formula One team has been going backwards. So we have to see. We have to see how it goes. I mean, there is still a top name, a top team. But moving up and down the ladder in Formula One is a really tough thing to do. And, you know, and it gets tougher as over the years because the cycle of success and failure is longer than it used to be. It takes more time to build up and more time to slide away.
You know all the TV people, don't you, Joe?
A lot, yes.
Can you tell them all to stop trying to bant with Lando Norris? Because you've turned him into grumpy Lando Norris and he's just got fed up with middle-aged people trying to match his humour. So if you tell them to all just leave him alone so he can have funny Lando back, that would be amazing.
I think, well, I don't know. I always find Lando quite funny. He always says strange things, which I like.
Absurd.
And I say strange things
it's
to him sometimes,
which he
sort of occasionally I'll whip his head around with some remark that he didn't expect, you know. So it's quite fun. I like him anyway. He's a good fella.
Oh, you've upset certain parts of our live chat, Joe.
No, have I? What have I done now?
You said that he hasn't been tested. Was Sainz not a good yardstick? Sainz not good enough for you, Joe? Carlos Sainz.
Yes, I do know. Junior, Carlos Sainz Junior.
Because I explained.
Carlos Sainz is there at Ferrari and the numbers kind of stack up in Leclerc's favour, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Therefore, you can say that maybe, I mean, although Carlos is really good, I've got a lot of time for Carlos, I'm not sure that he has the ultimate pace on a consistent basis. I mean, Leclerc's got weaknesses and Carlos has got weaknesses too. They both made lots of mistakes last year. But, you know, it's a bit like the Barrichello-Schumacher era, you know, where they don't want two number ones. Two number ones is never very good. But what they really want is a really good number one and a half. And
yes.
Well, that's really – Gerhard Berger was a one and a half. Barrichello was, Eddie Irvine was one and a quarter.
until they actually needed him to win races, and then mysteriously...
He couldn't do it. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, that's... You know, there are a level of drivers who are the superstars. And we have to... You just have to go through and find out who they are. Now, Carlos, maybe next year Carlos will get it all together and start beating Charles. Who knows? But fundamentally, if you look at the numbers, and all the teams do this statistically, they analyze everything. And, you know, Charles is up there with the fastest of the fast in terms of his lap times. Max is number one, I'm pretty sure of that. But I think on the most recent assessments I've heard about, Charles is number two.
Okay, hang on. When you say out and out pace, quali pace?
All things considered pace.
Okay.
We're talking about teams are incredible. What do you think all these people do at teams?
They
spend their life analyzing everything and how to make it better. So they analyze everything to the nth degree. And that includes other drivers to find out who are the really quick boys who have got that extra magical 10th. The interesting thing is that right now, a lot of them have got the extra magical 10th, but then it's a matter of who's got the magical 100th after that.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever been such a split though between like what you can do on a Saturday and what you can do on a Sunday. And I still just have this gut feeling, and people will say, oh, I'm biased and ham-fosty British bias. But I feel like Lewis Hamilton on a Sunday, even now when you see his race pace, watch the lap times against George Russell during similar stints, he just still feels like that Sunday monster.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting and fair assessment, although there are days, like in Brazil, for example, where Lewis couldn't get near him. So, you know, you have to look at it over a period of time. You have to look at it statistically, which is what they all do. But, you know, I mean, they're all what people forget is just how good all these guys are. They're all good. Even Lance Stroll, even Nicholas Latifi was good. They're all really good. It's just that some of them are really gooder than others.
All right. Well, what you seem to be saying is the statistical analysis of industry F1 experts using statistical analysis is better than my gut feeling that Lewis Hamilton's quite quick on a Sunday. I'm upset by that.
I think that is a sound assessment of the argument between science and art, isn't it?
Okay, I'll accept that. Time for three.
You're an artist, Spanners, but the scientists will nail you with their statistics.
Do we have time for three quickish fire questions if I fire them at you? Boom,
yeah,
boom,
yeah,
boom.
Yeah,
okay, so they don't need to be super in-depth here, but Bob says, what's Jay Drizzle's thought? That's you, Joe. What's Jay Drizzle's thought on how much misery poor Ferrari fans, should expect for the upcoming season? Can Vasseur bring some order to the madness?
No, next question.
Okay, good. Oh, poor Ferrari fans, though. I do feel bad. Like, I know you're the enemy, Tifosi. That's never going to change. However, I do feel.
No, it's got nothing about enemy or anything. It's to do with the fact that is he the right choice to run that team?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I'm not saying he doesn't have any ability. I'm just saying I don't think he's the right man to run that team. And I may be wrong. He may prove me wrong. I hope he does in lots of ways, because when Ferrari wins, Formula One's always healthier. But it's been a very long time since they've won.
And yeah, I was going to say, who remembers? Who remembers
well,
that?
I do, because I was there.
I'm too young.
But it is a very, very difficult thing to do. And Binotto didn't do it perfectly, but he did a very decent job, except on certain elements, which is, you know, the actual operational stuff. But I'm not sure that the skill set is right for the job. So that's my opinion. And you can say I'm an idiot when it all comes right and it all works out brilliantly. But they had the fastest car last year and they didn't win the World Championship. So,
no, I'm with you. It's not good, is it? Okay. Second of the quickfire ones, Daz the Gardener asks, are the race fees rising for promoters like Silverstone? Because the tickets are, oh my goodness, the ticket prices, Joe, they're absolutely insane. The BRDC has often claimed to make not much from hosting the F1, but how much is not much? Thanks. I had a shock, and they had this dynamic pricing at Silverstone, which seemed pretty gross from a consumer point of view. I'll sit here and stand to be corrected.
Just thank your lucky stars you're not an American.
Las Vegas, my goodness, $2,000.
The numbers of what people are willing to pay for everything, not just the tickets, hotels. They can't, you know, a lot of English fans can drive in because it's a small country, you know, but you go to, you can't drive to Vegas every day. You've got to go stay in one of their hotels. It's a nightmare. And so, but I don't know because I don't do this, but have you tried to buy a ticket at Centre Court Wimbledon for the final? Have you tried to buy a ticket for the...
I
bought tickets for Rolling Stones concerts. I mean, they're all insane numbers.
Yeah.
The Five Nations rugby, they're all mad numbers now.
Yeah.
And that's because business has taken over sport. So what do we do about it? We watch it on television or whatever. I mean, I know it's not much fun and you leave the thing to the corporate, you know, all the tickets of being there to the corpies and let them get on with it. Just become a corpy, I suppose.
Yeah, or just leverage celebrity contacts to get Paddock Club invites.
Something like that, yes. Leverage. I hate that word. It's horrid, isn't it?
Okay. The next question isn't horrid. Thanks for that, Daz. And this will be the final one. Mike Stoner asks, is the Chinese Grand Prix ever going to make a comeback?
I don't think it's going to make a comeback in 2023 because the reason they called it off was the fact that you need to set stuff sailing off to China in order to be there.
Ah.
So there was a deadline by which a decision had to be made. And the fact that China has opened up a few borders, although, hang on a minute, there's still an incredibly... I mean, they say they're going to lift all restrictions going into China, but then everyone else is going, hang on a minute, we don't want your people coming here. So they're putting tests in place, and the Chinese are now, as of yesterday, are saying, well, we're going to retaliate with tests. Well, you do that. And you know, it's the whole thing, not to mention the fact that their COVID numbers are completely insane and off the clock. So I don't think it's going to happen. Now, maybe it's going to happen. Maybe, you know, but when? It can't happen in April. It's just too late.
It's difficult for someone like me.
They can't go later in the season. They've already tried to do that. That's why the calendar took so long to produce.
What, weather?
No, there's no space.
Oh.
There's no dates available later in the year.
Gotcha.
So, you know, basically we have a bit of a gap around Easter time, which is quite nice for us, believe me. But at the end of the season, there is no room to let's slip in another little race, shall we? You know, it's because it's just Christmas. Bang, bang, bang from start of September until Christmas. It's just boom, 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 boom.
New Year's Day in Shanghai as the season finale.
Well, why not? I mean, you know, apart from the fact that we want some time off. Formula One used to have races in January.
Mm.
It was in another world. People went off to South Africa to the summer, Kailani, you see, perpetual summer. And they got paid lots of appearance money in those days to do it. So the drivers were happy. The teams made some money and they went somewhere where they could sell their old cars. But nowadays, these things, you know, they're not the same motivations as they were in those days. So it's difficult.
It's not win on Sunday, sell on Monday anymore.
Well, it is with the old Lotuses. I mean, one of the reasons there are so many old cars around the world, South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, all these old vintage cars, because at the end of the season, people would go out to these places and flog everything.
It's a good track, though. That's the problem with Shanghai Circuit. It's a good track, and I do miss the track. I've got no strong political opinions one way or the other or concepts of geopolitics, but I miss the Shanghai track. I miss the Malaysian Grand Prix. I want Istanbul on the circuit. I want Indian Grand Prix back, the Korean circuit, all those great tilkodromes that support the modern F1 car.
No, you do not.
Yes, I do.
Some of those you don't want back, believe me. If you'd ever been to Yeongam, I'm happy to go to Korea. I think we should be in Korea. But a street race in Seoul is the way to do it. Not a ridiculous bog in the middle of nowhere. It takes four hours to get there.
But the layout, I'm watching it on telly, Joe. I don't traipse around the world in first class like you. But the track suited the modern cars. So did India. You know, we want these big tilkodromes back. I don't want to keep going back to Portimao and
Imola. We can't go back to India because there are people living in the garages, I think.
That would make it awkward.
And we went back to Turkey not so long ago and it hasn't got much better. So, I mean, it's a fantastic racetrack. I agree. But it's Turkey, you know. So it has to fit in with the modern sense of glamour, destination, cities, all this sort of stuff. We should be in... I want to go and have a race in Paris. I want to have a race in London. I want to have a race in... Because the other thing is, in order to get to these environmental targets and things. We have to stop having people drive to the races. We need to have trains. You need to have undergrounds.
Oh, but street races suck, Joe. Even Verstappen agrees with me. He said...
Depends on the street race, doesn't it? I think Baku's pretty exciting normally.
One in three when there's a safety car at the right time.
There's always a safety car.
Yeah, okay, that saves it. But all the other street races...
Now, Monaco is an exception, I think. Monaco is not very good. But, you know...
Well, I agree.
Well, it's hopeless. It's hopeless. You know, it's all done in qualifying, which is why people crash in qualifying and do naughty things. So... or allegedly do naughty things.
Well, the thing perhaps. Is, on this format, Joe, you behave yourself. You say allegedly. You try and, you know, you don't say any naughty words and you don't give away those secrets. However, I do say in the live audiences, it is a little bit looser, shall we say. And we might even pop open a bottle of Chardonnay at your expense, I assume. So go and check out MissApexPodcast.com/Joe. Join us on Friday. And whilst this is a very kind of, you know, this is my platform and I butt in whenever the hell I want, it's very much just Joe yarning. You spin a yarn, Joe, don't you, on these live audiences?
Well, I have been known to spin yarns. It's what I do for a living, Spanner. I'm a yarn spinner.
Ah, good. Well, you check that out, Joe, and also check out Joe's green notebook. And I think what I may do and set up before the start of the season as well is a Ferrari support group call-in. So I might have a call-in just for Ferrari fans, and we can sit in a circle. And I'm not going to sit and laugh at you guys. It's going to be a safe space, I promise. You can follow us. Go on, Joe. You want to be there, Joe?
Yeah, I was going to say you could do a co-promotion with Samaritans or something like that, you know.
Oh, bless. Look forward to the season, Ferrari. This is the best time of year for Ferrari fans because there's always hope. There's always a new season, and that is coming up soon. Follow Missed Apex at Missed Apex F1 on Twitter and our TikTok channel as well. I've started doing some TikToks where I just point it at my face and say things. If that appeals to you, go and follow it there. And also follow me and Joe on Twitter, at Joe Sayward on Twitter and at Spanners Ready as well. We'll see you on Sunday. Feedback at missedapex.net for your mailbag questions. We're going to have Summers, Matt and Chris joining me in the spiritual shed. Until we see you next, work hard, be kind and have fun. This was Inside F1 with Joe Sayward. All right, Joe, I don't think you're cancelled off the back of that. You survived.
No, except by Ferrari fans, I'm sure.
No, I'm sure they'll still let you start 2023. See you later, guys. Have a good one.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at yoquierodineropodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.